Welcome to another episode of Bonding Time. I'm Brett Bolton with the BDA, and today we have Tom Kozlik of Hilltop Securities. Tom, how are you doing this afternoon?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me back, Brett. I appreciate it.
Excellent, excellent. So, Tom, it's September 16th. It's quote-unquote transitioning into fall. We were just discussing the weather's finally changing, but here in D.C., it's heating up, man. Legislation has been released in the House. The House Ways and Means this week, again, September 16th. So Monday and Tuesday of this week marked up their draft reconciliation package. And for our listeners who may not know exactly what that means, the budget reconciliation package is the proposed $3.5 trillion spending package that covers a broad swath of social infrastructure, quote unquote social infrastructure. So the expansion of universal pre-K, free junior college, et cetera, as well as some physical infrastructure in which we are focused on today. So the bill proposes to expand municipal bond financing dramatically. The package includes the reinstatement of tax-exempt advance refundings. It would also raise the bank-qualified debt limit to $30 million and tie it to inflation. It creates a new direct pay bond in the similar vein of BABS, but there are some specific differences we could probably touch on. The American Infrastructure Bond, it has a varied reimbursement rate from 35% to 28% over its 10-year lifespan, and is also exempt from sequestration. The surprise is a massive expansion of PABS, which includes for water and sewer and first-time farmers, as well as the bill would expand the definition of exempt facility bonds. So, Tom, frankly, this includes everything that the muni market has been lobbying for the past decade. I clearly tax-exempt advance refundings of the past 4 years, but to see everything in writing this last Saturday morning was quite exciting, yet we both know that a lot of work is yet to be done to get these across the finish line and signed into law. So I guess let's start at what are your initial takes from the budget package? Anything really stick out to you? Anything missing that I may have glossed over there?
Well, you're right. There's a lot of what it is that the municipal market has been lobbying for over the years that was included. One of the things that I would note, however, is that the new direct pay, what some folks are calling BABS 2.0, is different. It is a direct pay infrastructure bond program, taxable with a subsidy rate, but the subsidy rate is not the consistent 35% that BABS were 10 years ago. It starts at 35% and then declines down to 28% through 2027 and there and thereafter. In addition, there's a Davis-Bacon stipulation that's included there. And one of the things that I think that a lot of folks really aren't focusing on where that new direct pay infrastructure bond is concerned, even though the language that we saw this week has a gross up provision to make it so it's sequestration proof, and that was included in there. One of the things that, based on the numerous conversations that I've had with folks who would be potentially utilizing these, the fact of the matter is after 2013, 2014, after the sequester, a lot of issuers felt and still feel burned by that ongoing subsidy cut. And I think it's going to take a lot more convincing to get them to participate in a program like this. And again, I'm reiterating that I wouldn't call this BABS 2.0 because the value seems to be less than what BABS were 10-ish years ago. That being said, to more specifically answer the question that you just asked, correct me if I'm wrong, one of the things that you didn't mention and one of the things that wasn't included is anything related to a potential repeal in some way, shape, or form of the SALT cap.
That's a major question mark. I know you and I discuss numbers overall, budget caps. I want to say that the Finance Committee and Ways and Means were allotted, what, $1.75 trillion? Is that right? Trillion with a T that they could fill up. And I think Richie Neal's draft only included about $1.25 trillion. Yeah. So clearly, there's more to come. I don't know how you can balance progressives versus moderates, blue state versus red state with the SALT cap. It's going to be tough as there's a 3-vote margin in the House and a 0-vote margin in the Senate. salt's going to remain controversial, and that's an expensive provision as well.
It's absolutely controversial. And as you alluded to in your opening statement, you alluded to all the work that needs to be done politically. And I think that if anything, over the last two-ish weeks, Senator Manchin has, through his numerous appearances on the Sunday talk shows and in his Wall Street Journal op-ed that was, I believe, a week and a half ago, he is laying out, I believe, a roadmap of what it is that either he and or the moderate Democrats in the Senate could live with. I am going to put a number on it just for conversation's sake, something along the lines of maybe $1 to $1.5 trillion. But as we have heard, not just in the last week or two, but over the last several months, anything less than $3.5 trillion for the progressive Democrats in the House is a no-go.
At the end of the day, somebody's got to be bluffing. We just don't know who at this point. And whoever Manchin's PR person is deserves a raise, because that man gets out in front of everything. It's rather impressive. So that's right. I mean, the numbers have got to line up with salt. The numbers have got to line up on all of these provisions. It's a massive $3.5 trillion. That's just kind of hard to fathom at this point, especially combining with the bipartisan package that has been tied to this via process that is an additional $1 trillion in spending. And again, that includes several PAP provisions. So there's a lot of good moving parts, but how to get to point A, to point B, to point C at this point in time, I don't know. And this is just in the House. We haven't thought about a potential conferencing of the bills either, the House and Senate version. That's a whole nother nightmarish scenario that I just don't know if they'll be able to get through.
Well, let's discuss the salt for a second, right? Because this is something that goes back to the third to fourth week in March. It was about a week or two after the president laid out some of the higher level details of just the jobs plan. And there was a significant portion of the New York delegation that came out and said, we will not support the infrastructure bill, whatever it looks like, unless there's some kind of complete repeal of the salt cap, right? And so those folks have more or less stuck to their guns, have not gotten additional support. Problem is that if lawmakers were concerned about the progressives in the House being a roadblock to going below $3.5 trillion, I would imagine that adding that salt deduction cap that Bernie Sanders has already said is and or looks like a tax deduction for the rich. I'm racking my brain trying to think if I've seen, I know that Sanders has said that. I just don't know if he has said that it is an issue that they can't get past, but that complicates all of this, you know, whether or not that number fits or not within the $1 trillion or $1.5 trillion that the moderate senators can take. I just don't know if politically that's something that makes it too difficult to get it through the House. And there's a lot of assumptions in what it is that I just said. I completely understand.
Yeah. We're kind of in the land of assumption at this point in time anyway. So yeah. I'm just thankful that you or I are not in charge of whipping these two bills, because that's a undesirable job at this point in time. So I know that neither one of these packages are law, and I don't believe will become law in the next few days by any means, but just the idea of it, seeing the legislation written out, what's the real world impact on the muni market? I know folks have got to be looking towards the future with the assumption that something will likely become law. So is there any immediate impact that you're seeing or expect to see in the coming weeks?
I think that, you know, one of the things that also came out this week, in addition to what it is that lawmakers wanted to include in on the spending side, is what came out. What also came out is how it is that lawmakers would like to begin to pay for this. And so we received some specifics about a higher corporate tax rate of 26.5%. A top individual tax rate of 39.6%, a new 3% surtax on those earning more than $5 million, higher capital gains rates. So taxes for what actually amounts to be a pretty small portion of the population, taxes are going to go up. And I think that whether or not this package, this $3.5 trillion, or this package passes in that form or in a form that is a kind of lower number, I think that what this really does is it reinforces the demand that we've seen for tax-exempt municipal bonds throughout this entire year. You mentioned we're recording this on September 16th. Through last week, we've already seen about $53 billion of money flow into municipal funds. There's only really been 1 or 2 weeks, I think, where money flowed out of municipal funds. So it has been a significantly net positive year where money has flowed in. And I think it's not the only reason of why it is that investors are interested in municipals, but it is one of the reasons why. And what I mean by that is whether or not this is something that causes taxes to go up, I think the expectation is that at some point, whether or not it's in the short term or medium term, taxes are going to be going up.
So there's been a real renaissance of taxable demand. Do you see a new taxable product coming from this bill, as well as the reinstatement of tax-exempt advancer funding? What kind of impact that could have almost immediately on that market?
Yeah, so I think that it probably depends if the date is immediate and or if the clock starts in the beginning of 2022. But whenever that date is, I think that immediately issuers, they will be ramped up. They will be doing the tax-exempt advance refunding analysis. They will know what that level is and if and when they can execute those. And if and when it makes financial sense, that is the option that they will choose. And I can't necessarily put a specific number on it because part of it depends on when, if it's enacted and when it's effective. But I think that that is a strategy that until the end of 2017, plenty of issuers were used to executing. And I think that it's not going to be very difficult for financial advisors and bankers to start to helping issuers execute those.
Sure, sure. So clearly, legislatively, we've got a multitude of podcasts in the coming months that we can continue this conversation. So this is going nowhere fast, but clearly this is a great conversation. And hopefully we'll have some outcomes to talk about here in the coming weeks. But I want to throw a curveball to you. I was just watching the Weather Channel. My folks live in the panhandle of Florida and have gotten like 20 inches of rain over the past 24 hours. And Louisiana, I feel like it's gotten rocked this year. Texas coast has gotten rocked. Has there been any immediate credit issues on the Gulf Coast from these storms, even heading up to New York? I know they got rocked from Ida, I believe it was. So just curious if the ongoing summer of storm has had any negative impacts on the market thus far.
You know, I think that one of the things that is really driving the market is just the significant amount of demand that we're seeing. If you talk to a combination of folks, almost no matter what position, actually, as I'm thinking about it, they will say that there just isn't anywhere near the amount of issuance and issuance is low. While the fact of the matter is issuance actually really isn't low. They're just saying that because issuance isn't high enough to meet that demand. Okay. And I think that that is in the market right now. That's continuing to really drive a lot of what it is that we're seeing. That being said, I think that what the year of 2021 is going, one of the things that it's going to be remembered for, not just what's happening with COVID, but I'm reminded of a book that I read a couple of years ago by David Wallace Wells, and who is a self-proclaimed climate change alarmist. And when his book came out a couple of years ago, he was criticized for being too alarmist. And if anything, I think in recent years, what we've found in studies that have come out and scientific results that have come out since then is that the things that he was talking about, some of them actually happen at an accelerated pace, even faster than what he was expecting. And I think that what we've seen with the heat waves in the Northwest, what we've seen with the fires in California, and don't get me wrong, I understand that there have been fires in California for decades, but there haven't been fires the magnitude, and not just this year, but the magnitude of the wildfires in California have increased year after year after year, especially in the last 3, 4, 5 years. And then getting to what it is that you've just been describing, the fact that storms, whether it's hurricanes, they are happening more frequently and with a force that is absolutely stronger on a more consistent basis. And I think that these are variables that while they might not necessarily be moving specific credits right now, they are definitely variables that folks are, I'm watching them, and they're definitely variables that investors are watching.
That's a good thought, I think, to end on. Clearly, this is an issue that the muni market's starting to heed and really take notice of. So those are some good thoughts, and sorry to put you on the spot there.
No, Tom. No. Definitely something that I've been thinking about a lot, especially over the last couple of months.
I'm sure. Let's plan to touch base here in a couple of weeks. I know that the House has a self-imposed deadline of September 27th to pass the bipartisan package, and I believe a soft promise to pass the reconciliation package before the end of the month. So plenty to talk about, and then we can turn our eyes to the Senate where things move at a glacial pace. So we'll catch up soon. Thanks again, Tom.
Thanks for having me, Brett. I appreciate it.